Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
From hospitals to grocery stores, essential workers throughout the country have put their lives at risk serving the public since the pandemic began. And while some employers have provided their essential workers with protective equipment like masks and hand sanitizer, as businesses around the country begin to reopen, there's one big question that looms large. Who is liable if someone gets sick? Now, a new Senate Republican coronavirus aid proposal released yesterday wants to protect employers if employees or customers get the virus. Labor unions and Democrats like House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer have said that those protections only reduce the responsibility of employers and put more workers at risk. Michael Sainotto is a journalist with The Guardian. Thanks for joining us, Michael.
Thanks for having me on.
Something I've been thinking about for a while, I just went to finally get a haircut after 5 or 6 months, and I had to fill out a liability form saying if I got sick, the establishment or the hairdresser was not liable for that. Kind of shocked me. Is that the norm now? Are you seeing that popping up in a lot of places?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen it at Disney World. A lot of places, customers are being asked to waive liability in returning to, you know, places of business where they are at risk. For instance, it says right on Disney's website that they're not liable at all for people coming back to the parks.
At the end of the day, it's a choice. A lot of people don't have a choice. These are the workers we're talking about. And when an employee gets sick from coronavirus at work, Michael, have employers been held liable, especially if that employee ends up in the hospital or, God forbid, ends up dying?
No, they haven't. And we've seen this since the beginning of the pandemic, and that's been a source of a lot of worker organizing around the country, is workers protesting and organizing in response to outbreaks at work and a lack of response from employers, whether that comes from a lack of personal protective equipment to not providing workers with paid sick leave when they do get sick, and just a lack of transparency from employers and how many workers are getting sick, and a lack of contact tracing. Almost every worker I've spoken to during this pandemic has had concerns about when coworkers have gotten sick. There's very little effort done by the employer to let people know they were working in this department or this area. Maybe any workers who were in contact with this person should get tested or quarantined, you know, things like that. And that's happening in a variety of industries.
So there's a couple of opposing forces here. There's the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, otherwise known as OSHA. They have issued guidelines for the coronavirus. What are some of those guidelines, and have those been effective so far, Michael?
They haven't been effective so far because they're just guidelines. There's no accountability. They have proposed guidelines for employers to follow, like wearing masks, putting up partitions to prevent a barrier from, you know, customers and frontline workers, cleaning protocols. But at the same time, OSHA isn't conducting inspections. There's been thousands and thousands of complaints to OSHA from worried workers, and the majority of those have been closed without inspection. What will happen is OSHA will send a letter to the employer. The employer responds, "We're doing the best we can," and then the case gets closed. You know, some workers have filed lawsuits against OSHA alleging that they need to enact emergency guidelines. Some state OSHA agencies have actually done this, where employers will be held liable. They could be subjected to fines if they're found to not be following state or federal guidelines to protect workers.
Let's talk a little bit about the Republican coronavirus package here when it comes to liability. What are they pushing for right now, Michael? Because it seems like, as we mentioned at the top, the protections here are for employers, not employees. Is that right?
Yes. Basically, what the argument is employers shouldn't have any sort of responsibility if workers wind up getting sick at work, or if customers get sick at work as well. It voids any sort of accountability for the employer, so workers can't sue, they can't, you know, file for any sort of retribution if they do get sick and, you know, wind up passing away, even if the employer doesn't respond to an outbreak in a way that protects workers. So it leaves workers almost responsible for themselves to enforce and protect themselves. But, you know, at this moment, workers are in an impossible situation. With millions of people filing for unemployment every week, they have to, you know, they don't have a choice to go to work or not. They have to take the shifts that they are provided. They have to take the hours that they can. If you have a job right now, you're lucky to have one, given the state of the economy. So it really gives employers a way out of reopening and the risks associated with that.
I'm wondering, Michael, what types of workers have you been talking to when we talk about workers? Are we talking up and down, you know, the line in terms of, you know, people who are working in supermarkets, minimum wage jobs, all the way up to hospital employees? Like, what types of workers are most concerned about this right now?
Across the board, nurses, hospital staff, frontline workers, grocery store workers. As more places have reopened, restaurants, things like that, to, you know, manufacturing hubs, warehouses, delivery workers, all the service industry workers, you know, all the people that are in constant contact with the public are putting themselves at risk right now. As coronavirus cases are, you know, increasing in many parts of the U.S., a lot of the major corporations, despite the increased risks and the increased workloads, a lot of these workers are faced with right now. A lot of the cleaning, the disinfecting, the protecting themselves and protecting the people they're coming in contact with, that responsibility is placed on them.
What happens to workers now? We're looking at layoffs in a lot of different industries. Is that right?
A lot of different industries are still laying off workers, whether it's as the PPP loans are expiring, businesses that have had to close again after reopening because of surge in coronavirus cases, to just industries that have survived up until this point without laying off workers, either companies announcing or warning that mass layoffs are imminent, like some of the large airlines. United Airlines said by October, 36,000 workers are possibly subjected to getting permanently laid off or furloughed. American Airlines has said that. There's been a lot of university systems who are making decisions right now to cut a lot of workers. There was a study a few weeks ago by the Economic Policy Institute that a large portion of workers who have lost their jobs during the pandemic, those jobs are not coming back. Those workers will not have a job that they had before the pandemic to return to. And a lot of industries, even if they have started to reopen, like hotels and things like that, they're not at seeing capacity or demand to the point where they're recalling all their workers, and the ones that are getting recalled, they might only get a few shifts, a week. They're not getting full schedules.
Is there any silver lining in any of this, Michael? Is there anything positive that we can say about workers in the United States right now? Because this is a very serious and grim picture that we're painting, with obviously which is necessary. But are there any bright spots? I'm wondering.
not too many. I think some of the bright spots, if there are any at all, have been The workers who have organized protests, strikes, workers still organizing to form labor unions or organizing with their existing labor unions to push back on employers or bad practices within their industry. The urgency for organizing has certainly intensified because of the working conditions caused by the pandemic. But there was a report in the Economic Policy Institute in December 2019, U.S. employers spend around $340 million on union avoidance consultants. About one in five union election campaigns involves a charge that an employer has illegally fired a worker. We've seen that during the pandemic with the Amazon protests. A lot of the workers who led those protests have been fired, have lost their jobs. A lot of workers are seeing the benefits of collective organizing and having a collective voice. It's been inspiring to see these workers on the front lines that are still working during the pandemic to protest and risk their jobs to improve their working conditions and you know raise awareness of how workers in these industries are treated across the board around the country.
Michael Sinato is a journalist with The Guardian. Michael, thanks so much.
Thank you.
This is WFAE's Morning Edition. I'm Lisa Worf. It's been 4 months now since North Carolina shut down, and though a lot of businesses have reopened, many are struggling, trying to get by with fewer customers and sales. Shante Williams represents many small business owners as chair of the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Black Chamber of Commerce. We spoke with her in late April, just after Governor Cooper extended the stay-at-home order, and we're checking in with her now. Good morning, Dr. Williams.
Good morning, Lisa.
So already in April, you were hearing from a bunch of business owners that they weren't going to make it. What's it looking like now?
Well, I'll tell you that those anecdotal stories have now come to fruition, and, you know, almost 60% of the contacts now are from businesses that have already closed and are unsure of whether or not they're going to be able to open up again at all. Our membership base is somewhere around the 30 to 40% closure.
For those business owners who aren't sure that they can but are trying to reopen, what's it going to take?
There's a lot of capital needs that were needed beforehand to, you know, kind of stabilize businesses that came in slower than expected. And then we're at a point where those funds were really not enough. And while $10,000 may sound like a lot for a one or two person business to some government officials, it's not very much when we think about operating a business. $10,000 is maybe a month's worth of overhead, depending on the type of business you're in.
You pointed out before that Black-owned businesses are generally underinvested in and came in to this with less savings. And what we've seen with the PPP loans is that a lot fewer of them also receive those loans. How did that play out that you're seeing?
Well, you know, that was honestly to be expected. The categories in which a lot of Black businesses operated, solopreneurs, professional services, maybe not having more than five employees. So they really were more micro businesses instead of being considered small businesses. A lot of the companies that went through the PPP process just didn't have a good enough relationship with their banker. Maybe the loan request they were making was smaller. And so banks like to make bigger loans. They enjoy customers that are taking those large loans, but that have had this really long established relationship. So early on, we saw a lot of businesses who had a very loose banking relationship, maybe just a bank account, weren't able to get in the door fast enough. And in a first come, first serve type of system, those businesses that don't have the really good relationships always end up at the back of the line. So the PPP process, I just don't think it was really designed for true small businesses, not the micro businesses that a lot of our constituents and members own.
I know you've been speaking with local leaders to try to get help as businesses try to reopen. Have you had any luck there?
I will say special thanks have to go to Mecklenburg County Commissioners Dina Doyle, as well as the Charlotte City Council, for really hearing our concerns and saying, okay, how can we get capital into the hands of businesses the quickest? So they were really good about listening to documentation requirements. They made funds available as they were coming in. We were very fortunate as the Charlotte Mecklenburg Black Chamber of Commerce to also get a $200,000 business support grant so that we could help those businesses reopen that have had to close in the Mecklenburg County area, and being able to offer that technical assistance along with some capital and funding to help them reopen.
After the killing of George Floyd and the protests that sprung up, there was more of a push to support Black-owned businesses. Did any of your members see that?
I think some of our members saw some increased revenue generation in spots. So one of the things that we challenged a lot of people saying, I want to support Black businesses, is don't just buy a sandwich at lunch one day and say, I supported a Black business. But we wanted to challenge people to do something that was more sustainable, do a subscription service. You know, if it's a place that offers coffee and sandwiches, do all of your business meetings for a month or two or permanently there. You know, some of our members did see a slight uptick when things were really in the media, but a lot of that seems to have fallen away. So we are renewing that push, because supporting Black businesses is supporting the entire Charlotte community, because that's our tax base. That's the vibrancy of our community.
From your perspective, how do you see the face of Charlotte changing?
Well, unfortunately, you know, we talk about economic mobility a lot in Charlotte, and I feel like we were 50 out of 50 4 or 5 years ago. We've dropped below that now, because entrepreneurship and business ownership are key factors in helping a business move out of poverty and move into, you know, a different situation. So for me, the face of Charlotte is becoming a story that we really may not want to embrace. It may be that more minority businesses are just not open, meaning they don't have brick and mortars. They've been forced online. So it's much harder to patronize a Black business if you wanted to walk in the front doors, because if they've gotten evicted from a building, they may not be able to get another lease that's advantageous for them. And so we just may lose out on a segment of entrepreneurs of color because of COVID-19. And that's going to mean that the face of Charlotte, the picture of Charlotte, the colors of Charlotte are just much less rich, because they just couldn't make it and they're going to go back into the workforce. And we're going to miss out on that creativity, that vibrancy that comes from business ownership and entrepreneurship.
That's Shantae Williams, the chair of the Charlotte Mecklenburg Black Chamber of Commerce. Dr. Williams, thank you.
Thank you, Lisa.
And Shantae Williams is a member of WFAE's Community Advisory Board. This is WFAE's Morning Edition.
For some, wearing a mask in a place of business has moved from a question of safety to an ideological battle. In Michigan, 2 high-profile altercations involving masks turned deadly. One victim tried to enforce the law. The other sought to defy it. Events like these have prompted some Michigan bar and restaurant owners to offer training designed to de-escalate mask-related conflicts with customers. From member station WKAR in East Lansing, Kevin Lavery reports.
In May, Calvin Munnerlin found himself in a heated exchange with a customer at a thrift store in Flint. He was trying to enforce the state's mask law, but his stance cost him his life. He was shot minutes later by a man who arrived at the store with the customer's husband. Weeks later, near Lansing, another customer who refused to wear a mask got into an argument with a convenience store worker. He then stabbed another customer and was shot and killed by a sheriff's deputy. Tragedies such as these have put Michigan's frontline customer service workforce on high alert. The Mayfair Bar in Hazlitt opened in 1934, when the ink ending Prohibition was still wet. Its rooftop deck overlooks a lakeside park, making it a popular place for drinks. But now you can't walk into the Mayfair without a mask. It's something bartender Joe Hiltz contends with.
There's a couple of people here that we honestly haven't felt safe around, but we do what we do. We just deal with it and just move on. We've been dealing with drunk people for 20 years, so this is just a different type of situation I have to deal with.
Customers aren't served at the bar anymore. They have to stay at their table to be waited on. In many states, mandatory mask orders have turned hospitality and service workers into compliance officers. For many, it's an uncomfortable role.
Because of COVID and just society being so charged up right now, we said, all right, we got to do something specific to prevent disturbances.
That's Scott Ellis, who heads the Michigan Licensed Beverage Association. He wanted his membership to hone their skills to help them de-escalate intense encounters. Ellis, a former police officer, turned to Paul Biesinger. He's another former officer who now runs a company specializing in workforce violence prevention. Biesinger says employees need to listen to their customers with empathy to help keep the interactions positive. It's key to avoid so-called trigger phrases. Here's a big one. You need to calm down.
In the history of people having conflicts with people, using the term you need to calm down has never calmed someone down. Because what that infers is that the person you're dealing with has lost control.
While this specific training may be novel for some hospitality workers here, similar efforts have been underway across the country for years. Chris Hulbert heads development for the National Conflict Resolution Center in San Diego. He urges employers to be aware of their own personal bias.
Maybe they have his or her own attitude about people who refuse to wear masks. And that really has to be held in check because that will feed the fire.
Back at Mayfair Bar, owner Brett Story says the training he's just received is already paying off.
It's getting easier by the day. I think it's going to keep going that way.
The group plans to expand its online de-escalation training to a national audience next month. In the era of coronavirus, restaurants and bars are finding customer service more challenging than ever, and some are trying to meet those challenges with new training and patience. For NPR News, I'm Kevin Lavery in East Lansing.
Black babies cost less.
And now to a Team 10 investigation. A San Diego mother of four says that she was fired from her job of 9 years because she needed to keep working from home during the pandemic. She says company managers thought that she would be distracted by her children. Team 10 investigator Adam Rakusin shows how she says the company interfered with her right to care for her family.
Been very hard. We had to give up our apartment. We now live with family.
That's Tanisha Newsom describing the drastic changes in her family's life after she says she was fired from Axos Bank.
It's an adjustment for the kids.
Tanisha is a single mom with four kids. One of her children has ADHD, another's autistic. Life before the global pandemic was stressful.
So I would get up at 3:30 in the morning, get the kids and I out the house by 4:30. And get to my grandma's house.
Tanisha says she got a job with Axos Bank 9 years ago. When the stay-at-home order went into effect, schools closed, and she started working from home.
I was told that basically I was supposed to use my breaks legally and my lunch to do what I needed to do for the kids, which anyone I know that has kids, that's impossible. You can't put them on a schedule when they're hungry or when they need to use the bathroom.
Tanisha is now suing Axos Bank for wrongful termination and failing to provide reasonable accommodations, among other things. The lawsuit states, knowing Tanisha required a work accommodation or a medical leave to care for a disabled child during the global pandemic, Axos failed to attempt accommodating her need. According to the lawsuit, instead, Axos terminated her in order to rid itself of an employee who required accommodation.
With what you're going through and what your child is going through. But instead of that, they just told her, figure it out. They didn't give her leave. They didn't offer her leave. They actually denied it when she said, hey, should I go out on leave? And then they fire her saying, oh, you're not productive.
Aureen Hagquist is Tanisha's attorney. According to the lawsuit, Axos used a productivity tracking program for its remote workforce. The lawsuit claims Axos knew the program was unable to track certain aspects of employees' workdays, which caused the system to erroneously underreport working hours. The lawsuit claims Axos used inaccurate reports to place Tanisha on a performance improvement plan. Lawsuit says a month later, Tanisha was fired.
But she did exactly what they wanted them to do and the work that they asked her to do. And when she needed help during a time of a global pandemic for an internet-based bank, they said no and kicked her out the door in a two-minute Zoom call.
A spokesperson for Axos says they don't comment on the specifics of pending litigation. In a statement, the spokesperson did write, with respect to this complaint, we can say the allegations are false and omit material facts, and we're confident we will prevail once these material facts are presented to the appropriate forum. Tanisha says due to the pandemic, getting a job hasn't been easy.
Hopefully I get something soon.
Adam Rakusin, Team 10.
Tanisha is also suing for racial discrimination. Her lawsuit claims the company passed her over for promotion, freely opening the door to her white colleagues. The company is yet to file a legal response in court.
Context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Friday, July 31st, 2020. So I have been told. Messed my voice up after the program yesterday evening. What a 2020 it has been. Woo! Struggling to proceed. Our weekly broadcast, Neutralizing Workplace Racism. Dial in if you have either figured out codification or if you have a problem that you would like to get suggestions, logical suggestions on how to proceed without creating any new problems. That is the standard, solving problems without creating new problems. Standard for the workplace and beyond, really. But the number, 720-716-7300. Decode 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. Number again, 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. Lots to share before we get to folks who called in as well. You can email untiljustice@gmail.com. Untiljustice@gmail.com. You know, we have some folks who are not able to dial indoor. They want to maintain some anonymity. Feel free. You can write in. We can share your commentary anonymously. If you have suggestions and or if you have a situation you would like suggestions or feedback with regards to dealing with. The audio snips that we heard at the beginning, I almost included, they had like about a 25-minute report just on businesses losing their liquor license during, you know, the whole Rona situation, for what some of what they were talking about in the report that we did hear about not enforcing social distances. So, like, if you own a restaurant or whatever it is, you serve alcohol, people are coming in, you're letting people, you know, get drinks at the bar, they're not wearing masks, they're not social distancing, that type of thing. You have, you know, maybe too high capacity if it's supposed to be 50% of capacity and you're over that. But they said there was a lot of businesses that were not for observing the rules, snatched their liquor license. And, you know, for folks, if you're in business, particularly if you sell alcohol, that is massive, the amount of sales that they do. Even the amount of dialogue in the midst of a global health crisis where they got a daily death count like it's a war, in the midst of that, alcohol is huge one. Like, people mad about bars being closed and can't go out to get drinks and complaining about it, and I don't want to wear a mask. And is the liquor store an essential business? All the rest has been amazing. Anyway, I did not play that report, although that was, you know, right in the ballpark. I did play the report about, again, liability. We talked about that last week. I have spoken with attempted black parents, black workers. That is exactly what they have gone through, where their white employers have not been forthcoming, where workers have been getting sick, even testing positive for COVID-19, and they didn't say anything. Ned or Susan just disappeared, for 4 or 5 days, and then someone later, oh, yeah, they're still under quarantine. What? Quarantine? When? Didn't exactly what they said in the report, didn't, you know, share. Maybe the other people in the department at least should go get tested. If you all, you know, went and had lunch donut time with Ned, you know, it looks like he might have the Rona. Maybe you should get tested. None of that. Business as usual, just as tacky and really just reckless disregard for public safety, in my view. But lots of that has been widespread, and I can't say that I'm surprised by it, because one, people have not taken the Rona seriously in the U.S. from the very beginning, White House on down. So that's one. Two, workplace safety is not taken seriously in many places to begin with, many businesses. That's why that was something we prioritized, emphasized, even before we got to all this. You, victim of racism, you have to make your safety a priority, and especially now, because, I mean, it'd be anything. Oh, yeah, they ran out of gloves. We tried to get gloves, and they ran out, so sorry. Anything. Yeah, we tried to get masks, they ran out. We tried to get soap, they ran out. Anything. Soap, they ran out of soap. Really? Yeah, we tried to get soap, they ran out. Sorry. Have to bring that. Anything. And that's exactly what they said. They'll give some lame excuse. You make a report, and oh, yeah, we tried. They sold out. We tried to get hand sanitizer. We tried. We're doing our best. We're going to get right on it. We take it serious. The Rona is serious. We're going to go to the store again tomorrow, and hopefully we'll have fresh gloves for all. Case closed. Same thing they do with racism, by the way. But take your safety seriously, and I would still snitch. Even if they're going to be worthless about it, I would snitch about health and safety matters. That's a little different than racism. You might get some help. Same thing with racism. I wouldn't hold my breath about it, as they say, but I would encourage snitching. Some people have said that they have snitched during all of this, and they did get constructive help. So, and especially if you can do it anonymously, where you're not doing it from a workplace phone or something like that, and, you know, tell them honestly, hey, I have concerns about retaliation, but I do want to report potentially unsafe work conditions just for the benefit of everybody. It's a public safety issue. Let's see. They talked about the report, black businesses in North Carolina, the Charlotte area. I said, I'm not sure if it was last week, but it was recently. It was since all of the protests, George Floyd and all the rest of it. They had been reporting many outlets, mainstream media outlets, I mean. They had been saying that black businesses had seen an increase in sales. Because people are saying, yeah, racism is a big problem. So, you know, we're going to go and get lunch at this here black cafe, or, you know, we're going to order and get some toilet paper. Bookstores, they had a lot of reports on that, black bookstores. Hey, we are confused about racism. Let's go get, you know, How to Be an Anti-Racist. Let's go get some other books written by some black people, you know, help us understand what all this is happening. Get some of Oprah's best. I said, that could be the case, but I am very suspicious. In the middle of all this, if you got gun-toting white people every day, something about that just strikes me as not believable, incredulous, if you will, that, yes, that you're going to have a substantial number of white people who are going to be donating finances to black businesses. As you have massive unemployment and businesses closing, that just seems totally not believable, as I said. And she said right in the middle of that report that they did see a slight bump, but that has mostly dissipated. That sounds very believable. I don't have any doubts about that at all. White people are not confused about racism. They are not confused about where they place their nickels. They're going to be with white bar owners. Got to get that liquor in, not going to some black bar to serve me drinks. When they were talking, last report, when they were talking about, or actually, wait a minute, before we get the last report, they talked about masks and how a lot of businesses is uncomfortable. I know for me it would be uncomfortable. I didn't even further retreat to having to tell people we got to wear masks and social distance and all that. Yeah. But they said, hey, you know, some workers have said they're uncomfortable with all of this. We'll do training. White people know the value of training. They know how to provide training correctly so that you get maximum benefits, boost your really education and your efficiency on your job. That's the purpose of training. They know that. Look at this. All the times that they talk about what is it, sensitivity training and all the other nonsense when white supremacy racism is an issue, but we still got the problem. Mask the escalation. How you deal with this problem without it becoming a shootout over just saying, you know, 60 please, face covering please, so that doesn't become a shootout, you know, at the Walmart or whatever. Training. And they say, oh, yeah, this is great. So helpful. Just being empathetic, not escalating, how to use words, being able to pick out a dangerous situation like, uh-oh, gun bulge, might want to have security on standby. They know the value of training. Let's see. The segment on the attempted black mother. I will say it again. Gus T is not a parent. That said, wow, that is an astronomically difficult job, being an attempted parent in a system of white supremacy. This is an attempted black mom with four children. Like, whoa, I can't even imagine. Like, hanging out and having to babysit one for a day seems daunting to me, having four children, and you're a what they call single parent. So this mom, that, and it's exactly what I've been saying, all that work from home stuff, we do have some Cal's listeners, they have been able to work from home or even given the option. I think we've had some folks also who had the option to work from home and they declined it. We had others who, you know, gleefully took it right on. But we have also had a lot of folks that has not been an option. It's been get up, get to work, get out there today. In the first group, the report that we talked about, no liability, maybe you get gloves, maybe not, maybe you have to bring soap from home, get out there and work, and we're not liable if you get the Rona. It's been a lot of victims of racism in that disposable worker category, and that's ended up how they got sick. You've heard that from folks as well. But you get up, mom, they do all that nonsense talking about, yeah, we'll work with, what did it say? We're all in this together, all trying to help each other. Get out of here. So we got a black single mom. If we're all in this together, it should be bending over backwards like, oh, my goodness, what can we do? Resources. We got you a gift card to Starbucks and blah, 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 and resources for your children. Do they need a Kindle or a tablet or anything? So is their education okay? Are you okay? My goodness, oh, I can't even imagine. Like that sort of attitude. Now, what? Oh, you can't take the hours that we are? Oh, okay, you're fine. Like, dang, like, really? I just said, can you work with my schedule? I thought it was supposed to be, I thought we were all in this together. No surprise, and particularly given that was the experience for a lot of black moms and black fathers before the Rona. We had talked about that. We did all that talking at the beginning of the year about lactation rooms and what have you, and them not being sympathetic, not having any sort of, we're all in this together. We got a pregnant mom here. Wow, let's make sure you're taken care of. We got a brand new mom. Let's make sure you got a great place to sit down, privacy, so you can do some pumping if need be. No, we're making snide remarks, and why don't you go out behind the shed? We got the space behind the recycling bin. You could go out there, yes? Mm-hmm. All in this together, yes. We will come back to the being an attempted parent and all this, because we actually had attempted parents write in about how this is impacting their ability to work. We talked about this last week. I encouraged parents to dial in, so we had some people write in. We'll get that as well. Let's see. The email again is untiljustice@gmail.com. Untiljustice@gmail.com. And we can get your commentary anonymously if you have things to share. Let's see. Actually, going back to last week, we had a young lady, victim of racism. She dialed in right towards the end of the broadcast last week, and she was talking about some of the issues that she was going through in her workplace. And it was, I think we were already kind of over the three-hour mark. I try to stick to our, you know, format, 3 hours, kind of a long time to hang out for anybody. But it was right at the end, and so we didn't get a lot of time for people to respond. Bea in Toronto was with us for that program, and so she emailed in suggestions for that young lady, victim of racism, who shared with us last week. So I'm going to get read Bea's commentary first. So she shared. here's some suggestions to the last caller. Number one, companies, organizations have implemented a policy or policies on COVID-19 prevention and protection of staff. She, caller, should review the policy. We talk about policy and procedure a lot. I'm sure for a lot of folks that policy has been updated during all of this, if not repeatedly updated. Next, B, caller should submit in written form, email, her inquiry referring to the company's policy with this phrasing, direct quotes, in efforts of protecting the staff during the COVID-19 pandemic and now being made aware that a staff has tested positive, will there be company-wide COVID-19 testing to maximize safety for all? And that is, what do we encourage on this here program? Questions. That is a question. Love it, love it, love it. And then you can just see what they say for response. Let's see. C, contact the local health and safety department responsible for assisting companies where staff have tested positive for COVID-19 and request for anonymity. I just talked about that. That way, external government departments will hold the company accountable. Love it, love it, love it. Just talked about that. That was exactly some of the information that we talked about from the reports this week. Like I said, Blackside said that a few times, probably countless times during this whole sad situation with the Rona. Black self-respect during all of this might be, hey, I'm going to use my words as best I can. I will ask questions all from a weak position, but I'm going to do the best that I can to maximize my personal health, safety, and well-being from a very weak position. That is going to be the task for a lot of us in the midst of all of this with the Rona. But take it seriously, review policy and procedure, ask questions, snitch. I encourage that again, snitch. This is a great time to snitch. If rules and regulations are not being followed, they're not taking it seriously, it doesn't really look like they have any protocols in to make sure that people are going to be at work and safe. Particularly if you're a parent or if you, you know, have other people, you not just are looking out for your personal safety, you're looking out for the health and safety of you and anybody that you're going to be in contact with. That's it. Number again, 720-716-7300. The code 564-943 pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. So let's see. So since I'm kind of limping through the broadcast today, hopefully folks will not will recall that this is not a broadcast for spectators, and folks will have their hands up, be ready to share if they have suggestions, comments, offerings, problems that they would like to address for the broadcast. Let's see. Right, right. So folks are spectating. If they're going to do the spectate, sit around for the whole broadcast and listen. We will definitely be wrapping up early to preserve my voice since we'll be on tomorrow and lots to do. So no spectating. I am sure that we do not have 14 people, 15 people, 5 people sitting around to listen to racism, white supremacy, where nobody has an issue on the job. That just strikes me as Dr. Welding would say, if you have 5 people, 3 people, I don't think that would be possible. Anyway, and now it wouldn't be in a situation with racism, white supremacy. Now it would also be, are they following protocols? Does it look like your job is taking things seriously with regards to coronavirus? You have all the PPP you need, PPE, excuse me, that you need? No problems? Your schedule is flexible. If you need to check on something, if there's a family emergency, Lord knows there's been lots of that, unfortunately, throughout all of this. They're responsible. They're sympathetic. They're understanding. Like, absolutely, take the, you know, whatever time you need. If you are in such a situation, bravo. I hope it continues infinitely. Like, as long as you are in the workforce, I hope that, you know, is a situation that you have. But that is very irregular for many, many victims of white supremacy. Let's see. I'll get in one more email while folks are, I guess, getting their thoughts together, lollygagging, as it were. Let's see. All right. Next email. Oh, we got our parent. Email from our parent. Like I said, we should not have we should not have attempted parents spectating. We should not have attempted parents spectating. Talked about this last week. How is having offspring impacting your ability to work? Job being flexible? Are they understanding all that? We talked about that last week. We had a victim of racism right in. She says, I just listened to last week's workplace racism. I'm an attempted parent of two girls, 12 and 1. Yikes. I'm still saying yikes because that's such a young age and wow. But that is Dr. Welsing. She said no closer than 2 years apart. So bravo on Dr. Welsing's recommendation there. And soon, oh my goodness, she's already said she's got two girls, 12 and 1, and soon to be three girls in January. Ooh. My goodness, I'm sweating just reading about that. Congratulations. I hope everything goes great and safe in January. Wow. My goodness, that is so hard. I'm having issues with childcare. I work in two positions as a registered dietitian full-time and as a registered nurse part-time. Well, bravo. We need more of that. I let both my bosses know about my childcare situation. My non-white Asian female boss said that I can adjust my time the way I need. My white female supervisor said I need to think about what I should do because the schedule will adjust soon. I am currently going into work twice a week, and my partner's schedule is adjusted to accommodate the days I'm working. This initially caused me anxiety for about a week. I spoke to my partner, and he stated that he would leave his position to cover childcare if necessary. The downside is that he would have to look for a position that does not increase his risk of the Rona. I also requested help my non-white nursing associates, a non-white Asian male, and a non-white Black female to help me look into another position, another position that would accommodate my need for child care. My non-white male friend informed me of an overnight position. He said that he could speak to the nursing supervisor to assist me in obtaining the position. Bravo, Black self-respect. However, after a lot of thought and discussion with my partner, I decided not to apply for the position. Here are some of the reasons. One, it can affect my pregnancy due to lack of sleep. That is an enormous one. Sleep during pregnancy is huge. Number two, it can reduce my maternity leave. That would be a big one too. Number three, it also will disrupt my insurance. Number four, it can also increase my risk. Wait a minute. It can also increase my risk of exposure to the Rona. All would be good reasons. I plan to restart my search during or after my maternity leave. It would be constructive to hear from other attempted parents about how they would approach this situation. Questions I could ask my white supervisor would also be helpful. I did look on my union website for childcare information, but they don't have much assistance except voluntarily reducing my time, which means losing money. Plus, this option has been suspended thanks to the Rona. Dang. I plan to email a union rep to get more information. Oh, she's listed. Okay, great. Listen to the archive. Oh, she's vegan. She's vegan. That's amazing. Wow, vegan mom. I'm so impressed. Yay for vegan moms. I'm so impressed. Hopefully you can share with, like, maybe you can write a book about that, being vegan during pregnancy and what you ate, because that's so important. I know black moms personally, where they had a lot of diet problems, where they either lost their appetite or losing weight, that type of thing during pregnancy. I know that a lot of moms deal with that. So maybe that's something you can think about when you, you know, while you are resting and hopefully taking great care of yourself until January. If we have parents, said it many times, I'm not a parent. If we have any parents to give feedback, because she did ask a question on, you know, what you think would be the best way to proceed in her situation. She's having some difficulties with childcare. She has a 12-year-old and a 1-year-old. She's pregnant now. Sounds like she's in her probably second trimester. But job is not necessary. Even though she said that the non-white supervisor, Asian female, was receptive, you know, we can work with you to accommodate your schedule. But her white supervisor was like, oh, man, I don't know. You think about the future and what you want to do. Like, dang, it's not, I thought we were all in this together. Not at all. But if we have attempted parents who have any thoughts to maybe help her kind of process, I'm with you. I would not really want to do anything that you think. Ever, all the reasons that she listed, messing up her sleep schedule, potentially disrupting or minimizing some of her maternity leave, disrupting her insurance, potentially exposing her to the Rona, all of those would be reason enough to, you know, no thanks. I'm not going to do this. I'm just going to get ready to go on my maternity leave and just focus on getting really quality rest, eating really quality healthy foods, getting lots of water, and maybe doing some prenatal yoga until January. Those would be my thoughts if it'll work out financially. But if that will solve the childcare and kind of put you, she said, I thought it was important. She said that she started having anxiety once it became kind of a difficult situation with the childcare, trying to figure that out, and the white supervisor. She said she had anxiety for a week. Those are the type of things that I think it's really important to listen to. Those, Mr. Fuller, in fact, people that have heard him, where he says sometimes you get signals from the creator, that might be one kind of messaging about, whoa, I need to stop and reconsider some things here, because this is really impacting me in a non-constructive way, like just thinking about this, and is this going to be a looming problem causing me stress, and that's really dangerous. I mean, you're in such a sensitive state when you're pregnant. I would say that might be a signal right there that, Matt, you do not need any more of this in your life right now, your child's life, your children's life, or your child-to-be. You do not need any more of that in your life right now. Prenatal yoga. The number again, 720-716-7300, e-code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Let's see. Oh, folks are not spectating. How lovely. So parents certainly, but if you're not a parent, you have your own situation, suggestions, feedbacks you would like to offer. But again, parents, no spectating. Folks who dialed in with a hand up should be with us. Let's see.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Greetings, beautiful people. I'll try to make this quick. This is Emmy out in Virginia, and I had a situation that I really wanted to call in. I feel like it's successful, but only time will really tell. So I work at a psychiatric facility for children. I have to keep saying that to remind people that it's not they are dangerous, and they are actually psychiatric with psychiatric diagnosis, like schizophrenia, like bipolar, things like that. Some of them have tried to kill their parents or siblings or someone else. They are children, so a lot of times they are little, but that doesn't mean we should ever let our guard down. A lot of them have been traumatized, sexually traumatized. They suffer from PTSD. They deal with a lot. That being said, they can also be exhibiting sexual behavior. They've become highly sexualized because of sexual trauma that they've experienced. At the facility that I work, we had two new admits. Both of them are highly sexualized. One of them was an emergency admit. Her foster care family was sodomizing her and sexually abusing her. So her trauma is very, very recent. They did quarantine both of them, but that's a whole other conversation of what they call quarantine and what is actual quarantine and all of that. By law, when children are asleep, staff can be with them 6 to 1. I do work the overnight. When they're awake, certain states have a ratio of 4 to 1. Some states have a ratio of 3 children to 1 staff. When they are asleep, to be in ratio, 6 children to 1 staff. The facility I work at has the children separated on 2 floors. There is an alarm, so if they move a certain way, the alarm will sound, but it doesn't tell me who moved, what bed moved, what room moved, anything like that. This is the only facility on the property that is 2 floors. I voiced my concern about this and how dangerous this is. When I first got this job about a year ago, I would say that, to your point, the creator was speaking through so many staff. Everyone was like, this is an all right space, like, for you to do whatever it is that you need to do. But A, B, C, D, E, F, and G. So make sure you are aware of those things. And, you know, they made me privy to the dynamic of the job. One thing that I've always talked about on here, one thing that I just always, always, always do is document everything in writing. I'm the biggest fan of it in writing, to the point so that people will even think I'm weird, especially white people, because they'll not want to put something in writing and will try to talk directly to me. I don't care what they say. My blood could be boiling, and I will just have my pre-coded responses. That's interesting. Okay. Thank you for the information. Okay. And immediately when the conversation is done, I go to my email and it starts, as per our conversation, you, 1, whatever it is, 2, whatever, you know, and I do it like that. It is going to be in writing. I don't have conversations with white people about anything other, you know, like anything that might be relevant to anything is never going to happen verbally with me. It is always written. With that being said, I document everything as I should. I told you the population of people that I work with. When one of them wakes up and is not going back to sleep, I'm technically out of ratio because I can have 6 of them when they're asleep. Once one wakes up, I'm technically out of ratio. The children's meds wear off and they wake up. And when they're up, they're up. Another staff doesn't come in till 7 in the morning. They're waking up 5:30 to 6 o'clock. When they started putting me by myself, I asked immediately, how do I document this? Because, you know, if one of them sexually molests the other one and I don't get there in time, because some people think these things take, like, a long time to happen, and they don't. Someone could grab someone's behind or chest or something like that or fondle someone. It's happened. And when that happens, it has to get reported to CPS. And what they'll do is fire the staff, claiming that the staff wasn't watching the child. And if CPS wants to, they can take you to court and say that you were being negligent. I cannot afford that. So as soon as I was placed by myself, I wanted to know, what do I do? How do I document this? I was told to write an incident report. When I first started the job, everyone told me, hey, you need to take pictures of your incident report, because somehow, sometimes, paperwork magically disappears. So if you have been documenting something and something sexual occurred or some other thing occurred and the company now has to go to CPS, they'll claim that no one made them aware that this thing was happening. And so had they known, they would have, of course, you know, intervened. I have about 16 of these incident reports. And I literally write it down, all the children that are up, what time they woke up, and I say staff is out of ratio. And then in one of these incident reports, I wrote, and I am officially requesting support. That way, if and when something happens, and I'm taken, if that happens, and I have to have this conversation, I'm going to pull up, and I requested support. And so getting to the point, I get an email, and not my direct supervisor, she's just the manager of the particular house of the facility that I work at. And she, you can tell by her tone that she wants me to stop writing these incident reports. And I respond with a question. When one of them wakes up, am I technically out of ratio? She responds, and she says, and that, well, we, our standards are higher than other standards, all this other fluff. And then she says, well, that's just what it is, a situation, that's just a situation. She doesn't directly answer my question. Then she says, this is where you need to utilize problem-solving skills. And then she proceeded to give me, like, six suggestions of what I could do with the children. Now, I have the house on lock. I don't have behaviors. That's not the problem. I'm just documenting that they are awake and I'm by myself and they're separated on two floors. Humanly, it's impossible for me to monitor them. So it puts me in a very precarious situation, one that I'm not going to allow some company to wipe their behind with me when something hits the fan and then try to fire me or make it seem like I was negligent. That's not going to happen. And I'm not being anyone's whipping boy. So when she did that, her whole tone and everything, I responded and said, thank you very much for the suggestions, and I will continue to document as the children wake up and I'm out of ratio. Thank you for understanding how important this is to me. And that's the end of the conversation. If she responds and wants to keep going, that's completely on her. One thing that was really important is there's an overnight supervisor. That's my direct supervisor, a non-white Black female. The minute my intuition, like the same way Mr. Fuller, like the creator might speak, something in me said they're going to try to start something between us, because if I'm out of ratio, her job would be to put me in ratio. But the problem is, if there's an actual behavior, kids are fighting or something like that, that's where she needs to be. Or if another house is actually out of ratio for the whole night, that's where she needs to be. Me calling on her every time the kids wake up at 5:30 or 6 is not a legitimate solution to the problem. They need to hire staff, put the girls on one floor, do something better. It doesn't matter. So as soon as I even slightly felt something, I told her, I'm going to continue to write my documentation, but, you know, don't for a second think that I'm saying that you should be here at all times anytime one of the girls wakes up. And I made sure to make it very clear that there's no conversation about she's not doing her job or she's dropping the ball on her end. Sure enough, they wanted to have a conversation with her, and she kept saying, you know, and she was like, no, that she's doing the right thing, and I have to be in ratio at another house. And then at the same time, I came in one day and my documents were out. So someone had gone, because I keep everything organized, and they had, like, taken my stuff out. So I inquired, why is my stuff out? And the staff that were there, their whole demeanor let me know that this white female is taking my documentation personal and trying to make a situation that isn't a situation. But it's completely fine, because I'm not surprised. That's what white people do. But what I will not do is stop documenting. And I have made it very clear, you can act like you want to lose one of these documents if you want to. I have it all organized on my phone in a folder called incident reports. Everyone I've ever written, time, everything like that. So if you want to let something happen here and make it seem like it's my fault, we won't have that. And I know that their response to me, because when they respond, everything is like super professional, whereas I know they're not that articulate. I work with these people. I know they're not that articulate, but it's because of the response that I had when I had to engage with the executive director over company-wide testing for COVID. And after that, I know that I've been on their radar as a non-white person that they feel like could cause trouble or isn't going along with the script that they want. But yeah, takeaway point, write everything, everything. It's the only way to save you. It saved me so many times. And I refuse, and I won't let anyone bully me into, like, not doing what I know is right. So anyway, I thank you all for listening to me.
Namaste. Wow. Act like you lost it if you wanna. I love it. She has it organized on the phone and ready to roll. That is black self-respect, in my opinion. In so many ways, too, like being alerted. Like I said, you get those signals in a lot of different ways. You can call it, you know, whatever. But just you get that energy, you get that vibration that I think they're going to try to start some conflict between us. And I'm going to be preempted and let her know that's not what this is at all. I'm just making documentation so that they don't try to come and blame me and say that I'm culpable when they have. And I've worked with children, too. That is kind of irregular to have one person and they're supposed to be responsible for supervising all of these young people and they're on different floors. Like, whoa, that is crazy. Like exactly what she said, that they have, it is rampant, the sexual misconduct in those type of group home facilities. A lot of it for those type of reasons. They're understaffed. If it's not staff doing it themselves and all the Dr. Francis Kress-Welsing, when you play around with children, or excuse me, when you play around with sex, the joke is on the offspring. She said they were even new intakes who were being sodomized in the foster home. Black babies cost less. But black self-respect in the workplace, I love it, the documentation. We're out of ratio. I'm not going to be blamed for this. I'm not even, in fact, you have institutional reasons where I could be blamed here, us being on different floors and all the rest of it. We're out of ratio. I'm going to continue to document it. And in documenting, I am requesting support. Like, what are you doing? Be creative. Do some problem solving to come up with it. We can't hire another staff person so that we can comply with staffing ratios. And I love it even when she does all that. We talk about it all the time, being composed. You respond with questions. She comes in and all this, writing all these reports. Do some brainstorming. Just think creatively. You can figure it out. So if a child wakes up, am I in ratio? Ask all these crazy questions. We're just here to take care of children. So if a child wakes up, am I in ratio? Just asking questions. Just asking questions, and things go right where they need to go. I love it, too, when you raise the issue with the other young lady to say, I'm not in any way trying to have any conflict with you or say that this is your fault. This is just I'm out of ratio. You're where you're supposed to be at the other facilities. It's not like we're having behavioral issues here. I'm just reporting that I'm out of ratio. They need to hire someone else. Love it. Love it. And her saying you're doing the correct thing. Keep documenting, doing the correct thing. Absolutely love it. And them rifling through the papers, we've heard that so many times. Didn't we have the person, they dialed in just, I think it was like 2 months ago, and they said that they just went to the bathroom. This wasn't like they left for lunch or anything. Just went to the restroom. We're talking like 2 minutes, wash your hands, take the whole 20 seconds and come back. They had their phone on the charging dock, came back, and you could see where somebody had tried to do the security pin and didn't get it correctly. Like, what? Come on. Come on. When you're in the workplace, you don't have a private location. I wouldn't care if you have the biggest office in the building. You're the president, the CEO. You don't have a private area. That's why we say watch that possessive adjective. It's not your office. It's not your desk. None of that. That, I think, when you don't use that possessive adjective, that keeps us in the correct frame of reference that, oh, yeah, I'm not going to be leaving anything around because it's not even my desk. It's not my office. And I know how white people are. Snoop, 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 snoop. You're not ignorant about racism because you spend all your time snooping on us. Doesn't matter. Anything that you leave there, and that's the exact way it should be. Anything that I leave here in the desk or whatever it is, I don't even need it. You can go through all the notes, rip them up, put them in the shredder. They're in the cloud, buddy. Have a blessed day. Love it. Love it. Love it. The email is great, too. Get everything in writing. Love it. Confirm in writing via email. Love it, because they like to do lots of things like that where they'll say something verbally and then forget or pretend that they didn't say that. It'll be lots of contested conversations about what was actually said and all that. So get it documented in writing. Let's see. Other folks who dialed in, especially parents still spectating, other folks who dialed in with a hand up, proceed.
May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, good evening, Gus. Good evening, callers. Gus, I could not wait to call in. I've called in before regarding my son. I'm working out on the West Coast. If you can remember, I told him maybe it's his calling to get the racist fired because another one has bitten the dust. So a quick backstory, and if you remember this story, he has a supervisor that really likes him, looks out for him. She's non-white, non-black, Indian. And she has really empowered him, encourages him, and has really found a great ally, you know, as a supervisor and support. So it's working really in his favor, but I'm still encouraging him to stay on code, make sure he's doing his job. So a white female at the job, he called me about 2 weeks ago, letting me know that he's starting to have problems with a white female, that every time there's some conversation going on, she constantly is bringing up the protests and Black Lives Matter and how she's in such support of them. And he's like, he just got a really bad, uncomfortable feeling with her because at the same time where she's saying she's in support, she's using some very racist type comments about the riots and the violence that is taking place in the protest. So, of course, I'm telling him, look, just stay focused. She's not your friend. Do not overshare, all these other things. Something happened, and he tried to do some conflict resolution with her to talk because he said, oh, she was meddling with his patient and making comments behind his back. He heard her. He confronted her. Is there a problem? She told him to get the F out my face. It got the exchange got a little heated. In fact, he said when he went to her and said, hey, can we talk? Her comment was, if you want to get in a yelling match, you're not going to win. And he goes, what? Yelling match? What are you even talking about? Like, I'm coming trying to get some understanding here. So before it was all said and done, she told him to get the F out my face like 3 times. So he backed off. Other coworkers, you know, acknowledged that they heard her say it and that they will back him up. He says, so I told him, you know, no conversation. He said, no, he's not going to talk to her, only business. Well, every day or other day or so, he's like, you can tell she's going out of her way to try to talk to me, to force me to talk to her, interjecting with my my patients while I'm having sessions with them and just making now that she says I'm not being her friend, she even went to the supervisor and said, he won't talk to me. And the supervisor's like, what? Like, are we in high school here? And she did tell the supervisor, I know he's your baby. So, you know, she was doing, and paying attention, telling him what time he came in, what time he clocked in, what time he went to lunch, like watching him like a hawk. And that was what that other discussion was about. Fast forward a few days ago. Monday, I think it was, he said that he was working with a patient who started calling him a nigger. He said the patient kept calling him a nigger over and over and over again. He told him, watch your mouth. He says, oh, you don't know, because he was saying it in another language. But he knew what it was because other people had told him what he was saying. So he tried to redirect the negative behavior, offered him ice cream, told him to finish his session, he'll give him ice cream. He kept calling him nigger, nigger, nigger. He said, stop saying that. She wasn't far, the white woman wasn't far out of earshot. She comes over, begins to accost my son, telling him, why did you tell him that? I'm going to call the ombudsman on you, report you, and all this other stuff. And my son's like, what? You're in my situation, like, you really need to mind your business, whatever, whatever. The supervisor comes, and when the supervisor came over, she called him a effing queer. The supervisor heard it. My son says, you're done. He went his way. She went her way. So I told him, he called me immediately. He's breathing hard and he's upset. And I'm like, okay, this is what you got to do. You're going to calm down. Did the supervisor hear? Yes. Okay, good. Fast forward. I'm going to read you the email. Just a really quick part that was sent to him. I asked them both to calm. I'm going to fast forward. I asked them both to calm down and tell me what happened. She said that she, I'm going to call the woman she and my son he. She said that he told the patient to shut his mouth. He said that he told the patient to watch his mouth as the patient was repeatedly calling him a nigger. She argued that it is not the correct approach to treat a cognitive impaired patient. He pointed out that the patient does not call other rehab staff who are black nigger. She insisted that She insisted that he is unprofessional, and she insisted that she will call the ombudsman and report him if he was not disciplined for his behavior with the patient. I told her that I will gather more information and figure it out, and that's when she heard him call him a effing queer, and she said that she did it in the heat of the moment. Now, this was the line. She said that she is intimidated by him as he is tall, and she will call the police for harassment if he continues to speak with her in this matter. Okay, I reminded her that as far as I have witnessed, she was physically getting closer to him, and he did not approach her. I told her to take a break and not to discuss the incident with anyone. So another thing she said here, she said she did not like being called. Okay, so another little backstory. She comes to work. She's come to work high. She showed my son urine that she had from someone else so she could pass a drug test and admitted to taking cocaine. So in that first argument, my son said, you come to work coked out. So that was the word, coked out, he said he used. She said she did not like being called a drug addict. I told her that I understood. She also said she knows how to protect herself without calling the police. I told her not to create new problems. So there was a couple of more pages. Long story short, my son was able to speak with the head of the facility, and they decided to let her go, which she was let go a couple days ago, and she came to pick her stuff up today. So earlier today, my son called me very upset, said that he was being written up because she told them that he called her a fucking bitch, which he swears. He's like, Mom, I never did. I'm totally thrown off. This is such a lie. And I'm like, wait, so I read the report over again from your supervisor. She never mentioned that you called her that. Can't they see, you know, that this is lies and she's being vindictive? And especially because I called him earlier today, and I'm like, I don't like that line where she said, I know how to protect myself without calling the police. That is a threat. You know, you don't know if this woman has a weapon. Now she's lost her job. She says, it's all your fault. Like, I want you to be very, very aware. I want you to be paying attention and do not take this lightly, Alex. And he's like, oh, I know, I won't. So her now saying that, and they're willing to write him up, but he didn't get written up. And he said that the higher ups actually said that they know he wouldn't hurt a fly because he's not a physically, you know, aggressive person. So they knew that that was a lie, or as they put it in the email, she was just being dramatic. So because of the cows, because of, you know, Dr. Fuller and Mr. Fuller and Dr. Welsing and all the podcasts and all the episodes and the people that you have on, the guests and just the education, I was able to relay the information that I have learned from the COWS program, telling him how to, you know, be calm, do not over talk, sit back, ask questions, listen, like really guide him. And I remember the other gentleman from New York, you know, he talked about his daughter, you know, at first, oh, you're doing too much. And they think we're doing too much as parents. But at some point in time, they are going to face racism, white supremacy, and to be able to give him the tools to navigate that process, I feel really good. I feel like I am doing the best job I can as a non-white black mom in this world today. So thank you, Gus. And I will mute my line. Thank you.
Wow. I'm super proud. Job well done. That is the point, I think, of counter-racism, be able to give people constructive information so that they can help, you know, solve problems that you encounter or other people. If you have offspring or folks that you care about, help them solve problems, racism being the primary problem that we're trying to solve. That is spectacular. White women, again, it is not the man. The man, the woman, the child system of racism, white supremacy, the man, not Dr. Tommy Curry's work, again, the intimidating black male. I even remembered Allison Manswell. She was a guest on the program, and she talks about racism in the workplace, and she does consulting to try to help black people deal with consulting in the workplace. And she said, I can't even give black people the same advice that I give everybody else, because that is such a common occurrence, black males being accused of being threatening and aggressive, intimidating and hostile, going to rape the whole building, kill us all. That is the system. Let's see. The being professional, I even have to pause with this one, because it sounds like at some point before all of the terrorism commenced, it was tacky. Now, this mom shared with us her child. This white woman comes in and shows him a vial of urine. And it's not even her own urine. Now, if I understand it correctly, this is a medical facility. So, I mean, hey, you know, it's a hospital and you do urine samples. Sometimes they do tests on urine. All the rest, I totally understand. They do scientific tests and all that. I got it. That's a little different than you toting a vial of urine, and it's not even your urine because you're trying to evade a drug test because you've been doing coke in your off hours. So, and then they turn around and call us, what is it? You got all these crack babies running around turning into super predators. Criticize us. Say the problem is you're doing drugs, got your pants hanging off your behind, selling drugs. That's the problem. So anyway, so it starts off tacky, and I can't even minimize that because we have so many reports where the victims will have some random white woman. When I say a random or a random white person, meaning this is not like your lifelong pal. I don't think your son knew this white woman since like elementary school. I don't think they go back like lawn chairs, as they say. But they'll come and tell you some trashiness like that, not sharing stock tips or ways to keep your family safe during the Rona or things like that. Man, we did so much coke last night, I can barely see. Woof, I had to sneak my neighbor's urine in here so I could be like, what? What? Get away. We're in the middle of the Rona, for God's sake. Like, they tell you to not be touching other people's face. You are carrying around someone else's urine. And we're in a health facility, no less. Like, come on. That would be one I would definitely document. As we talk about document, such and such, Susan came in May 9, coked out urine to evade drug tests. Put that all in documentation. But I don't fraternize. She shares that. I don't feel obligated to share anything with her. What did Emmy say earlier? Interesting. If that, I might not even say anything. Just, man, wait till I get to my notes. Woo, she's carrying urine about. So, urine thing. So it started off tacky as it normally does.
then it gets to the terroristic. Get the F out of my space. That's what I talk about in terms of professionalism. You get a reputation. You don't do any of the joking around, not even in the best of times. I don't do any sort of talking and what have you like that. No cursing, none of that. It's always professional. Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir. No, ma'am. No, sir. Good evening, Dr. Phillips. Evening, Mrs. whatever name is, Jacobs. That's how it is all the time, every day. Get a reputation for that. As we talk about that, get a reputation for being on time. Get a reputation. They say got a reputation. I know him. He wouldn't hurt a fly. This white woman is apparently crass and tacky all the time. She's out of reputation. People hearing her out cursing out this person, cursing out this person, sneaking in urine. I'm sure she's not. That's not the first time that she talked about her drug habits.
When he mentioned to his supervisor about the urine, her eyes stretched open, was like, you know, he's like, yes, she showed it to me. He said, oh, she says she takes medicine for tremors. So he says, did she show you a prescription? Oh, yeah, she says she's going to bring it in but hasn't brought it in yet. Because there's none. He says she was shaking so bad, eyes were dilated. It was the craziest thing he had ever seen. So, of course, when he had the meeting with higher-ups, he brought it up, and he's like, you know, I told him, you know, stay in the question lane. Well, wouldn't this be a liability to your organization to have an employee on drugs? And he said they just looked at him and goes, yeah. And isn't calling me a effing queer a hate crime? Yeah. He was like, I was just wondering. And he said he sat back, and I'm like, oh, son, that was great. Like, that's it. So parents, just stick with it. You know, they will come to you. They will need us. Mm. Yes, everything you're saying, Gus, on point.
In the question lane, that's all you have to do, just ask questions. You can just be as ignorant as possible. Like, I'm confused. I don't really even understand the hate laws, man. Somebody calls you a fucking queer. Now, is that what they call it, the hate law, a hate crime? Does that qualify? You can tell me. Maybe it doesn't. And just have them break it down. Is that a liability? You all do drug testing to get hired? Do you all hire drug addicts here? Can you just go and pick up any crack addict off the street and they get a job here? Oh, okay. Just wondering, just asking questions. Reputation for how you conduct yourself in the workplace. You're already going to be thought of as a nigger. It doesn't matter. But you at least want to have a reputation as being that is a punctual, polite, courteous nigger. That's the type of reputation that you want in the workplace. That can be to your advantage in situations like that. Like I said, I'm sure that's not the first time that she was crass and rude and doing what she does as a little white woman, white terrorist in the workplace. Now, when they get wound up like that, and it's probably going to be a lot of that because you got the road and everything else, people are stressed about all kinds of things, the coin shortage and all. So they come in and they get on that. You effing queer and all the rest of it. You get out of my effing face. She said her son called. He was breathing all hard. I said that. You start breathing really hard. If you're noticing your voice, reason I lost my voice, you start noticing that, oh, this is all done. In fact, I recommend once it gets to that point with anybody, I don't care if it's a black person, a white person, anybody, in a workplace setting, any workplace setting, where they're you effing this and you effing that, and get the effing. I do not feel safe. That's straight out of Gavin DeBecker, The Gift of Fear. I do not feel safe. You're no longer being professional. I'm going to excuse myself from this conversation. However you want to, you know, worry about it. It should be something short. That's probably even too wordy, but it would be, this conversation is done. I don't feel, and that would be a key word. I don't feel safe. And when I make the report, when they come to talk about this, all of that, and get your side of what happened, I removed myself from the conversation because I no longer felt safe. They were exhibiting unprofessional workplace conduct. She cursed at me, was threatening. She yelled. She came in my personal space. I didn't feel safe. Safety word got to be used. God, and especially now, we're in the middle of the Rona, and you're coming up yelling at me, breathing all. Anyway, I would, there's no retaliate going back and forth. And, I mean, this woman is making threats. All of that cursing and I'm going to call the police on you. Like, do what? That's Amy Cooper at the park in New York. I'm going to call the police. I'm not going to be treated this way. Wow. Document that one. Again, making threats in the workplace. She comes back. Don't you think I need the police? I know how to protect myself without calling the police. That is straight out of Gavin DeBecker. He has that whole section we read on people making threats in a workplace. That is a straight, that is the sort of thing that I would report to human resources. Not under the guise of racism. I would repeat exactly what I just said. This is what they said, July 31, 2020, 5:15 p.m. Julie Smith said, I know how to protect myself without calling the police. To me, it seemed threatening. I would like to report that. I did not feel safe. It seemed like she was making a threat. I would report that immediately. That's exactly out of Gavin DeBecker, people making threats like that. She has a history. This is the type of, in this environment, I would expect that sort of white person to come back on the job and anything, retaliation, vandalism to the vehicle, that they can identify which vehicle is yours, anything, just from a white person like that who is on drugs. I mean, to say unstable is minimizing it. Like, man, I would want to let security know, like, if she comes back, this could be a problem, like, with just all of that, the cursing at you and threatening comments, if they have security there, I might even want to make sure that they are informed that this woman could be a problem, that she comes back on the property, that they should be alerted, because I would not be surprised at all. Let me see what else. You got to keep maintaining your composure in those type of situations, really all of it, because so many of those, there were so many opportunities where your son could have been, you know, going to what? F you and blah, 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 when she's, you know, calling him queer, and then when the patient keeps calling him a nigger. I don't know. That is so common. I don't know if he's read any of the books that talk about medical racism, black man in a white coat. They got lots of them, but that's such a common thing for medical staff, medical professionals to be victimized in that way. They might have a code on what's supposed to happen. I know they filed a lawsuit. Some medical professionals filed a lawsuit here in Seattle specifically very recently because of that sort of thing, saying that staff did a poor job at managing this, that they kept letting them know patients were calling them nigger and all the rest, and they didn't do anything about it. They just accommodated. They would accommodate the patient and ignore the staff. But I would check to see if they have policy on that. And even after this incident, ask, because that was a part of it. I responded, maybe that's not the best way. What's the best way to respond when a patient calls someone a nigger? What's the way that, you know, we should respond so that, okay, this is institutionally the way that we think is best to handle this sort of situation? What would the ombudsman say? Another question. But
yeah,
composure.
The really odd thing with that whole thing, that whole part as well, was supposedly the patient called her girlfriend and she calls him boyfriend. I said, so make sure you point out the fact that she was more offended with the you telling the patient to watch your mouth or to stop calling me that, versus him calling you a nigger. So she never said to him, come on, that's not nice. You know, that's your therapist. You shouldn't be calling. No, she didn't say that. She was, and she thought, she said that he said, shut your mouth. So another person said, well, she sees shut your mouth and watch your mouth as the same. And he was like, that's not the same. Those are two different, very, you know, different tones and aggressions. I did not say shut your mouth. I told him to watch your mouth. But that is a really good one. Thank you. I will tell him to inquire about the policy on patients calling him nigger. That's a really good one.
Or staff, even, if she's calling people queers and all the rest of it. Like, yeah, what's the policy all the way around on this? And if they don't have a policy, it would seem like with all these incidents, maybe they should have a policy moving forward. But that is Spectacular effort, ma'am. Bravo. Sounds like you did an excellent job. And that was Thomas in New York, I believe, who was the one who said that his daughter was like, you know, Dad, you're crazy. You're listening to that crazy, you know, radio program, wasting time, and racism isn't a big deal, and blah, 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 and you're out there. And then ended up being a problem. And I had to come back and be like, wow, Dad, let me talk to you about this racism thing. Like, that as a parent, and that, I guess that goes for parents too, because I'm not a parent. But I have heard from other Black parents that sometimes it can be frustrating, feeling like your children are not responsive, they're not really listening, and you're trying to share information about racism. Sometimes you just have to be patient and not get frustrated. If the system of white supremacy does, in fact, exist, your child will find out at some point. Just have to be patient. Hopefully it will not be a rude, difficult lesson, but they will find out for sure. White people are excellent teachers in that regard. Let's see. Much obliged, ma'am. Always good to hear. I don't want to call it a success, but a constructive result. And like I said, I would definitely alert security and be like very much alert that I wouldn't expect anything if she comes back. Like I said, if she can identify a vehicle or trying to cause even more problems moving forward. Let's see. Let me give out the number again. It is 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Let's see. Other folks who dialed in, if you have a hand up, line should be open.
Hi, Gus. Yes,
let's see. I think, was that, I heard both of you. Let's see, was that B in Toronto?
Yes, but I can hold on.
You sure, Miss B? Yes, can I be heard?
I guess she's yielding. Yes, sir, we can hear you.
Oh, okay. Greetings. Yes, I wanted to commend the mom for her input with her offspring. I mean, priceless, valuable, priceless relationship in itself. By nature, and then on top of it, with this incorrect, unnatural global system of racist white supremacy, that kind of combination of somebody to assist you in the people activity of labor is beyond anything money can buy, so to speak. Wanted to start off also by asking a question: if the mom in the same or the similar profession as her son? That's the question.
No, we're not in the same profession.
Okay. I for some reason I was thinking it possibly was, but anyway, it doesn't matter. The value of someone having a person in the position of a mom to assist them. I know about it because my mom did that with me. She was always available if I needed her, and even if I didn't say anything, because one thing about mothers, they are expert on their children, and if they see a particular face, look, they would know something is wrong, and they would ask questions and bring it out, you know, as opposed to if the person, you know, kind of like was not willing to talk about it immediately, they would end up initiating the conversation and find out, you know, a problem and work towards helping that person solve the problem. And I definitely had that experience from a child standpoint in the relationship. So it's very valuable. I was just thinking, though, one of the remedies that I've always talked about and also used myself is to the first time that I see some sort of relationship like that occurring on me is to speak directly to that person that this is not going to happen. I'm not going to have this type of status with you or relationship with you. And a lot of times from that immediate standpoint, the problem would take care of itself. But I guess being that the person also doubled in, other than just being a not only being a white person practicing racism, they also had a artificial chemical problem also that made it consistent like that. But as Gus said, bravo to you. Being in that type of relationship with your son. There was one more question that I was going to ask. I just can't think of it right now, but I just wanted to state that for sure. And I'll when I come up with the other question, I'll chime in. Thank you.
Thank you so much, retired firefighter. I really appreciate it.
Well.
Awesome. More kudos. Being in Toronto, did you need more time or?
No, I'm fine. Thank you so much. I just got onto the call literally just a few seconds ago. So unfortunately, I don't know what's occurred, and I'll definitely catch up when I revisit while listening in the archives. But I wanted to submit a report regarding the old plantation. I received another check regarding the pandemic pay from the former plantation. And I also received an update to the investigation regarding workplace harassment that I had initiated in terms of requesting an investigation for, and had been battling all the way up until the final day that I had sent in the resignation letter. So according to their investigation, and I put that in quotes, if they are now, they meaning the area manager and the program director, are now stating that they had given me a final chance to go to another meeting. Now, mind you, the meeting that they had allegedly invited me to was after I had sent in the resignation, and I'm working at the new plantation. So there is no way that I'm going to be taking off any day to rehash the very information that I had already sent. So according to the letter, they claim that I've denied to come to the meeting because I did say that I will not be able to. I have other commitments and all the information they already had for their investigation. So according to that, they claim that they've denied that I've come to the meeting and that they had spoken to, and I'll call the staff person the perpetrator. They had spoken to the perpetrator, and they have deemed their investigation inconclusive to be accepted. So then this check that they had issued, it was for another amount, which was interesting. And I'm highly skeptical about this particular check. So I haven't sent in an email response But I do plan to. In fact, I plan to send an email response for tomorrow to the area manager, addressed to the area manager, in which it would speak about the investigation, so-called, as well as the check. So in terms of the investigation, my plan was to include the fact that, well, include the dates of which the so-called investigative meetings had taken place, as well as to also add that emails were also sent shortly after those meetings as well, and that I was under the impression that they were taking this matter seriously. In terms of the paycheck or the pandemic pay, I also plan to include in that response that I trust in the competency of OFGH staff that they have accurately assessed the pandemic pay amount and that it would be followed with a stub, a pay stub outlining the nature of the pay. And then that would be my final response to them, that in hopes that all the matters have been resolved. Although I know that I've resolved my own matters by leaving that toxic environment, and I'm so glad. I'm much better for it. So that was that. That was interesting. The other part was at the new plantation. There are two black females, myself included, as well as one East Indian female. And the East Indian female has been really into the gossip and whatnot, in particular with about the other black female who was younger than me. And so what I had done was I had, because the East Indian female was gossiping to me about this other female, and I said, you know, I really don't appreciate the gossip, and I don't really want to get into that. And I would often deflect to another topic, but she would somehow reroute that discussion back to gossiping about the other black female. So she'd be telling me about her age, about, you know, the car she drives, about her family life. And I'm like, well, you know, if the other female wanted to let me know, she would tell me herself. Why are you telling me? And she said, oh, you know, just trying to make conversation. I said, well, there's many other topics to make conversations other than, you know, about a person who's not able to speak for themselves. Well, she apparently took a flight to that, and I really didn't care because I don't care for personalities like that. And so when I was talking to my supervisor, I had relayed, who also is a black female, I had relayed to her, you know, just my concerns around that. And so what we did, because, and the reason why I felt comfortable relaying my concerns to her was because just in seeing her in those short moments, she tends to follow her code. She's very codified, even though she may not consider herself codified. And I haven't really gone into, you know, about, you know, the nature of racism and how it affects daily life and different aspects of life. But, you know, by the way that she speaks, she presents as she gets, as if she gets it, which is great. And there isn't really much that we have to say to each other to get the understanding of what's really happening. And so I had, that's why I had felt comfortable relaying that information to her. So she had spoken to the other black female and said it in coded language, you know, just trying not to say things, okay, that not everybody is friendly or not everybody who is friendly is your friend. And the other black female, the younger one, she got that. And so I was working with the other black female yesterday. And she had, you know, relayed her concerns. And I said, well, you know, whenever you're in the workplace, the three aspects that you want to make sure that you defend is your time, your reputation, and your money. Again, thank you for your program. Thank you to the callers and listeners as well for your input, for Mr. Neely Fuller Jr., for Dr. Francis Kress-Waldling, and for all other guests who have also made this point about the importance of time, because time really does equal life. It's more valuable than money or anything else, and it's something that you cannot get back. It's not a replenishable asset. Once it's gone, it's gone. And she appears to get it as well. And it just felt good. It just feels that justice is happening. And I'm really happy about that. We're very constructive in how we work together. We get things done right away. Whenever possible, I often assist. And in through the assisting, there's also the mileage that I can also claim as well. So that means additional funds and also increased presence within the position. Also, there was one thing that occurred where one of the workers, a black worker, was saying that they were not going to go for the pandemic pay. And everybody makes their own decision. So what I wanted to relay to a message is it doesn't matter how good you are. It doesn't matter how moral you think you are. It doesn't matter, because good and moral, they're all value judgments. They're all subjective. And oftentimes they're weaponized to control. It's along the lines of being civil. That term alone is weaponized to control. It's telling the victims not to stick up for yourself, not to really do anything for yourself, that you have to modify your behavior according to that of the perpetrator. And in my many years on this earth, before I used to be so nice and so accommodating and so, didn't want to rock the boat. And I've made a decision to myself that I'm not going to be civil. Not meaning that, and just to hear me out, it doesn't mean not to be civil as in I'm going to be, using profanity and things of that nature. It means really putting yourself first. Self-preservation it should be the goal of your life, self-preservation. And the reason why I say this is because the way that the black worker was talking about the pandemic pay, if they were to, say that they didn't want it, then somehow they're going to have a better presence within the workplace. At the end of the day, the workplace doesn't care. We're all expendable. Do what's best for you. Do what's in your interest and try not to feel any guilt about it. In fact, there shouldn't be any guilt because you are owed a lot more. There's a lot of our community has been stolen from, has been looted from for a very long time, ever since we've gone to these plantation warehouses, they call countries. And no, the time is now to don't be civil. You know, don't feel as if you have to be good, because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. They're predators and they're going to be doing what they do. So you need to self-preserve yourself. You need to make sure you defend yourself. You exercise your self-respect and when you go into the workplace, if there's something that is happening that, you know, you're receiving additional money, take it. You deserve it. You know, we're still owed our reparations and we still haven't received it. Take it. And just do what you got to do to dismantle. And I hope I was clear. There's a million one thoughts in my mind right now about this. But I'll leave the line. Thank you so much.
Context of white supremacy. Global System, be in Toronto, joining us. Much obliged. So glad to hear you out of the toxic work environment. She sounds so much better, like people that heard her like earlier in the year when she was working with folks where they were just jousting constantly and coming in earshot to say nasty things about her and all the rest constantly, just daily, being terrorized as opposed to where she is now, like way better position. That's what I mean about in the system. You're still in the system of racism. Right, she's got racist white person that she's dealing with now, right? But different. It's not saying that you're no longer going to have to deal with racism, but you can be in hopefully a better plantation, better situation. That's the goal, particularly if you find yourself where you're really under a lot of anxiety, a lot of stress, depressed, impacting your sleep, eating. Take that seriously. Exit strategy. A lot of times we end up being stuck in these type of really caustic environments where, you know, we were hoping this could be like a 6-month thing. And we end up being there for like 6 years and it can do a lot of damage, be in some place where we really shouldn't be. All of that said, the turning down pay and those type of, I don't know, I guess trying to curry favor with individuals classified as white, so that it's like, you know, look at me, I'm just here for the greater good. I don't even want any money. You know, you can keep the money, type of a thing. It doesn't. That's what I said before. You're still a Negro. You know, that's. It'll just be, oh wow, that Negro just turned down the pay. You know, and we'll still be fired first. I think that's been very common where a lot of us have tried that sort of thing, work twice as hard and do it for free and that sort of thing, and it doesn't amount to anything. That's the system of racism. Get every possible nickel you are supposed to get. She mentioned she got her pay, hero pay or whatever they're calling it there, pandemic pay. She got it, and she had her request, I hope I will be getting a pay stub so that I can verify the amount I've received. Important, because she had shared with us there was even difficulty in getting the pandemic pay, where she had to go and ask questions repeatedly, and it seemed like they didn't want to answer her honestly or in a timely manner. And then after she kept asking enough questions, money arrived. Get the pay stub and verify the amount. Make sure you're being paid accurate. Seems like there are lots of errors when it comes to the wages, time of non-white people. We heard that from some of our callers already using some sort of application where it's going to be the mom. That was the report we started with at the beginning, Black Mom. She said they used some sort of application that falsely shows she wasn't an efficient worker. Very common in the workplace. Defending your time, I love that one as well. That's super important, something we've talked about on a regular basis. Your time is of critical value. You don't get time back. Be really cognizant of really anybody trying to waste your time in the workplace. That is awesome. I think other people probably have similar observations. If you get to work in an environment where there's another non-white person, might be another Black person specifically, where they have some sort of code, maybe you haven't talked to them, right, about racism at all, protest, none of that, but just being able to observe and see how they function, what words they use, what words they don't use, how they function around
individuals classified as white. That right there can tell you a lot about how to even do they do a whole lot of eating on the job. I see that one person that, you know, it's snack time or it's lunch time. I don't do all that. I'm not Pavlov's dog. I'm not trained to go and get the salivating every time they pull out a biscuit. Like, oh, wow, it looks like this person, you know, has some sort of strategy about how they're functioning. Like, that might be a black person or a victim of racism. Not saying you go open up and share everything, but at least someone that you might be able to work effectively, constructively with in terms of at least being able to present things in a logical manner that are happening. I think B was saying she was, hey, looks like this is someone, we haven't talked about racism, but codified, logical. Dig it. What's not to love? Let's see. Number again, I said the protest, I'll just bring that up again. Anyone trying to bring up the protest, and it would be anybody, white person, non-white person, they wouldn't even get the interesting. It would be total silence. Right, and like I said before, depending on the proximity, if they're really close up, I might have to interrupt them. Social distancing. We're not supposed to be doing all that office gossip and stuff anyway. Social distancing. And that'd be that. But if it's protest and all of it, like, I'm here to talk, one, social distancing, and then two, we're supposed to be talking about workplace-related things. I don't think the protest and Al Sharpton, I don't think that's why we're being compensated for our time. Do you have those reports yet for next week? Immediately, right back to workplace tasks. That gossiping, man, that get a reputation for that. I do not sit around and gossip about anybody. I don't sit around and gossip about individuals classified as white, other victims of racism, none of it. Let's talk about the workplace. We're not talking about the protest. What are we supposed to be doing for the job? That's it. If it's got to be side conversation, we can talk about that. You got to talk about the weather or what have you, but I'm not sitting up here and talking about what type of car such and such has and what outfit they had on yesterday and who are they dating and what their children got in school. Are you serious? Knowing good and well, if this is the way that they're talking about a black person especially that's not present and this is the way that they're talking about them with you, what are they saying about me when I'm not there? And I suspect they might even be saying, boy, this is an ignorant nigger here. I'm just sitting here talking bad about all the black people. I feel exactly the same way about you. I'm just pretending that I don't. You're just so stupid and gullible and just keep on talking about the black person that's not there. Nip that in the bud. I do not participate in any. That is black self-respect at its best. Dr. Francis Cress Welding, I do not participate and gossiping about other coworkers, colleagues. They'll sit around, don't they say these are our family members? We're family. We're a team. Sit around and talk bad about other team members. Or Mr. Edward Williams, one of the best lines ever. You let him sit there and talk all of that. His clothes are wrinkled. Fingernails are dirty. Skin is blemished. Shoes are scuffed. Desk is dusty. His car is ragged. Wow. That is a long list of problems. Anything else? Wow. What can we do to help Gene? And you still get to be in the question lane. He said that one has stopped a whole lot of conversations right there. Never heard from again. Thought you were going to sit. I wanted to sit around and call Gene a coon for the next 30 minutes. You want to help Gene? Don't ever talk to me again. That was that. Never heard from him again. You don't want to help? This is a team. You just said they had all these props. We could just get them iron. I bet we could go to next door and we get iron for free. That would at least cross one of them off. You said his pants are dirty. Maybe it just doesn't have an iron. You don't want to get a free iron? Oh, okay. Go back to work. Again, I would snip all that. People that don't feel comfortable with all that about the gossiping or whatever. Social distancing. Please, you're not going to come and would it loiter in my workspace and spread germs just to talk crazy about another employee. If you're doing it across the office, that's even more lunacy. How is that professional? You shouting across the room to tell me about what June had on the other day? Come on. Come on. Put your mask back on and get back to work. The number again is 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Let's see. We had other folks who emailed. Make sure I get those in. Okay. This is a female victim of racism. Just my observation. Although I work from home, I noticed my supervisor assigning management duties to the white members on my team. There's that word again, team. Most team members don't have their photos up, but you can hear their voices and pretty much tell what their race is. And also, we do mock interviews, and one of the questions asks for your race so it's known what you are. I just find it interesting that considering everything is virtual, also, this week, we had an LGBTQ meeting, which had nothing to do with our job. From now on, to be compassionate to the LGBTQ team members, we have to use they, them, when talking to another team member we don't know. If you assign a gender to the person you are talking to without consent, then the supervisor will pull you aside and have a side chat. Wow. Degenderization, I think, is the term, one of the terms Mr. Fuller coined, and specifically with that when talking about we don't have men and women anymore. Not that non-white people victims of racism qualify for that, but we don't have men and women. We don't have even males and females, really. Them, they, intersex, get in trouble for calling somebody he, she. System, that'll be a part of what they call the new reckoning, see? That's George Floyd. We are doing this in honor of George Floyd. We will have our LGBTQ meeting. No more he, she. We will have correct professional pronouns in the workplace, and we owe it all to George Floyd. Don't we owe it to George Floyd? Whew. Context of white supremacy. It has been a year, 2020. Much obliged for sharing. I did want to say, though, the person, because we had an interesting round with that of someone sounding white on the phone. I'm going to have to bring that up at a later time. It's been so much. It's stunning to have that come up as something to talk about in the middle of all that this year, but I mean, we just talked about that, had an interesting dialogue about somebody sounding white or sounding not white, and there being confusion about that just days ago on the broadcast. So we will revisit that shortly. Let's see. We'll see if we have other folks who have commentary. Again, if we have parents, we did have a mom who was requesting input about she has a 12-year-old, a 1-year-old, and unless my math is incorrect, she's in her second trimester, I think, right at the beginning of her second trimester. She's thinking about a different position because she's having problems with childcare, but she had some, you know, reservations about doing it, and so she was looking for input in terms of, you know, should she just kind of be preparing for maternity leave, or should she think about, you know, perhaps getting this other position, and also questions that she maybe could ask her supervisor about child care and accommodation with her schedule and the like. If you have any parents to share, that would be grand. Or any other parents, if you are dealing with work-related issues as an attempted parent in the midst of all this, that would be great to hear from as well. Let's see.
Can I be heard?
Let's see. Retired firefighter? Yes, sir.
Yes, I remembered on what was the other subject regarding the parent that called in about her son. The patient, I think it was, that was calling him a nigger. I would say that probably if he would go directly to his immediate supervisor to mention about the policy, the work policy on a patient or anyone that is calling him name, what if the policy states on me being subjected to a hate defined term by a patient or a coworker, and and kind of like follow up on that, find out. I have been on the job that I was on, and one was at this country club that, for some reason, when white people moved out of the area and black people moved in, the country club decided to stay in that location. And we went on a call. The entire fire station at that particular point in time was all non-white black males. And we went in and my unit was the first one to arrive, and in turn the patient and some of the other country club members stated that they did not want us to service this person. Fine, I just left and went right back outside with the fire truck with supervisor's advisor on top of it. I'm pretty sure it went all the way to the chief, and there was no negative report on that response. So it's probably some policy that would give him some insight on that, about patients or whoever is subjecting him to that type of language, on those situations. I don't care what's wrong with your mind. Just a few weeks ago, I received a text speaking about a employee of Dade County Fire Department who I think changed their sex, I think, from male to female or female to male, I don't know which one, and it motivated the fire department to send out a full memo to everybody on the fire department on how to handle that situation. Very similar to what you just explained, and that's the nuances. That's the new issues that people face on employment nowadays. That particular type of situation, I guess. It was foreign to me while I was on, but I think it's normal. That's it.
Much obliged. Retired firefighter. Not sure what that was on the phone either, because I didn't. No other lines open, so I'm not sure what that was either, but I did hear a little click every now and then. But, I was going to ask if that, what we just heard from the caller who wrote in the new policy they got on their job in terms of what pronoun is acceptable. You're supposed to say they, them, unless you have consent. You talk to the person and they said, oh, these are the pronouns that I use. And you might get reprimanded with some sort of verbal warning if you're just, willy-nilly going out there. Hey, he said such and such. She put that down over there. You might have to get a stern talking to.
If that is becoming widespread, do other people have that sort of policy in the workplace? Have they had that sort of talk? Has that even been included with these fireside chats and such on racism that have come up over the year? Let's see. Do we have other folks? I am hearing noise in the background. I guess if you could either speak. Do we have folks that we missed totally or folks who had commentary? Okay, so they're just being there to be noisy. I'll give out the number again, 720-716-7300, the code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. Again, parents, do not be spectators. If we have attempted parents, would definitely be good to hear your code for how you dealt with all this and or suggestions for our she's already a mom but about to be a mom again, third time around, suggestions for her. She wrote in asking questions also. Other folks with suggestions, thoughts to share?
Hi, Gus.
Yes, ma'am, be in Toronto.
Yes, thank you. For the mom, who I believe has a 10-year-old, a 1-year-old, and in her second trimester. I do apologize if I have the ages incorrect. If she is being promoted to a better position or being transferred to a better position, definitely inquire. It depends on the nature of her work, which industry she's in, but to definitely take advantage of all the resources and all the flexibility in terms of accommodation as much as possible. I know that two plantations ago, the other place where I was being boxed in, they had a marvelous program for women returning from mat leave, where they would, and it was mainly white women that were there. They were allowed to leave work early to accommodate, to pick up their children. They were allowed sharing of their duties. It's not time sharing, but job sharing. So as opposed to working an eight-hour day, on certain days they will work 4 hours, and then another staff would work another 4 hours, and they would still be able to maintain their positions with their pay and their seniority. There's also education and other bonuses that they could take part in as well. So there was just a lot of different benefits that were available. So if she's interested, definitely take advantage of those. It's very often that not many non-white or non-white black staff in particular are even able to get opportunities like this. So definitely inquire. And definitely ask other moms who've been on maternity leave. They tend to share quite a bit, and they'll, you know, say about, oh, we've been able to do this, that, and this, and the such, and definitely have a running list and inquire about how one gets access to these benefits. For the son who was called the N-word, by a patient, there's several ways in which this can be handled. Typically, an incident report can be made because hospitals, as with any other organization, would have a policy, an anti-harassment policy, and an anti-racial harassment policy. Being that he's under a protected group, as a protected person under the category of race, according to what they have outlined under the white supremacist society, to definitely make whomever he reports to aware of the situation. And if he is the head person, then to you know, document that this is what has occurred, so that at least there is a running pattern as to what's happening. He could be changed to a different patient if possible. But at least there is some kind of record, there's some kind of documentation, and that management has been made aware of the situation. And then it would be the employer's responsibility to protect him under these circumstances, to ensure that this is not occurring again, a reoccurrence. And if the employer is abdicating their responsibility in protecting, well, then he can move on to actually sue if need be, and also submit a report of the employer not protecting him. Now, there is a caveat. According to theory, that's how it's supposed to work. Oftentimes, organizations will err on the side of protecting their image rather than deal with the matter at hand. So rather than ensuring that he is protected, they would much rather say no racism exists here and that he's more of a problematic employee. But then this is where the documentation will help substantiate his claim through his report. And I hope that was helpful. Thank you.
Documentation that has been mentioned several times during the broadcast. Documentation, love it. Policy and procedure as well. And then love it, the mom who's in requesting information. She, again, has a 12-year-old, 1-year-old, and probably second trimester, I believe, looking for resources or look at what resources are available. Encourage that as well. Just give a gander. See, but I would, again, pay attention if you're feeling any anxiety or feeling like you just want to focus on self-care and taking care of your little ones that are already here. Sounds great well as well. Let's see. The other folks who dialed in, make sure. Other folks that have a hand up that we missed totally.
Hi, can I be heard?
Our Bay Area mom. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Greetings to you and the callers. I'm thinking if it for the mom that you're talking about with the children and expecting another child, if she, I'm sure she has to work, but if she just has to work, I would, but just having the baby, I guess it's because I worked until I maybe was 8 months pregnant, but I think after the baby or right around maybe 8 months, maybe you shouldn't work for a while. Especially with the 1-year-old as well, only because you it's available to speak on. The 1-year-old is going to have to adjust to the new baby. So you're going to need that time to not only bond with the baby, but stay connected with the 1-year-old so the 1-year-old doesn't feel, because it's going to be real, that's going to be hard. So if you cannot work, I wouldn't go back to work after maternity leave. I would ride maternity leave out. So you can bond with the, all the children, the 10-year-old as well, or the older child as well, because then there's a new baby and how children respond to that. Now, economically, it might hurt. Maybe it hit me, but that's just the risk. It's just the cost of being a parent to me. So if you can not work, not go back to work for a while, I would, to mold with the children, well, all of them, because all of them are going to deal with the new baby in different, or both of them were dealing with the new baby, and then bonding with the new baby, and you don't want babysitters. And if you can get assistance maybe with the children as you're at home. So, okay, I don't want to hog up all the time with my rambling. Let's see, workplace places with me. I went to work today. The child that I work with, my supervisor popped in this week on the tablet, and she didn't let me know she was popping, and she just popped in. And say I start at 9, she popped in at 8:36, that kind of thing. Oh, we're going to do a meeting. Can you join me in Teams? But it wasn't for that time. It was for 10 o'clock. But anyway, she came at 9:15. Some foolishness. So they always try to catch you off balance. She's a Spanish-speaking Caucasian. So she was dressed today. She had her clothes on, and she tried to look a little more perkier and at home. And the child's mom stayed home instead of the grandma, because the child has been crying for the past few days since the weekend. And the weekend was real tricky for her. So since this child can't communicate, it makes it complicated to do anything. So I'm thinking maybe her stomach could be hurting as well, because they're giving her all this stuff. All kinds of stuff, and it's playing tricks with her stomach. But it's like, no, it's not that. It's not. But the child can't communicate. So I don't know how I'm going to be able to do. I'm trying to work with the child. I had a better day today than yesterday. Yesterday, with her mom being there, she just cried the whole session until maybe 20 minutes before I was leaving. I got her to do some projects with me. But other than that, I don't think. And that's the thing with molding with the children, because this mom works and the child is there with the grandma. And on top of, however, her being on the spectrum, her vocabulary is tremendously delayed. It's maybe the vocabulary of a 11-month-old, 10-month-old, because she's only saying spot words. So I'll mute my line and let other people have the floor, and thank you for taking my call, and I hope my 2 cents helped and wasn't offensive. Okay.
Well, I was highly offended. just joking. Bay Area, I hope you are staying safe in California. I know they were talking about shutting things down and all the craziness happening out there, so I hope they are taking appropriate precautions in the workplace. I'm sure the mom appreciates your commentary. I certainly do. I know that time is critical, you know, especially like you were saying, you know, having a really young child already, that's a big adjustment. And even the older child, she said she had a 12-year-old also, that's a big adjustment, you know, having another brand new baby. And it's such a critical time period that even with the economic impact of just going down to being a one income household, that's critical. Even and for the mom especially, because she was talking about the anxiety that she was feeling being in the workplace, like that is critical. Just being able to have that time to be home with the 1-year-old, be home with the 12-year-old. She was saying childcare was an issue anyway. So, yeah, that's logical to me. I would just be hopefully they're taking the safety precautions in your workplace. This at least sounds a little bit better. The child isn't trying to bite you and all the rest, like the urchins from before. The surprise
I guess, inspections or supervisions, whatever you want to call it, while you're Spanish-speaking white classified boss to check in on you to see how things are going from the safety of her residence. You said this time around she tried to look somewhat professional, like, let me get my blouse on so I can look like I'm not just sitting around waiting to get my next glass of wine and doing it up. Like, man, that, again, black people, for the most part, not been allowed to do that. Racist man, racist woman, much more frequently they've been allowed to do that. And to cut a fool on Zoom the whole time. Let's see. I was, after the program, had lots of computer issues. In my frustration, I cursed at the computer and cursed and ended up straining my voice, cursing about the computer problems. So there you go. That's what happened. Folks were writing about that as well. 2020 has been unpleasant. Other folks with commentary, we have like 20 minutes left in the broadcast. If you have commentary, *61, don't wait till the last moment, especially if you're parents and you have suggestions.
May I be heard?
Greetings, caller in Florida.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners and callers. I'd like to share some reports that have been occurring in the workplace. Let's see. There was a quick post I want to mention from a member of the CLIQ, Mean Girls. The post says, I guess it's about this person bragging on herself or whatever. It reads, you have two options, I guess. Yeah, you have two options. Option number one is to love me. Option two, chloroform. All right. So I guess, once again, that's violence that I guess you're going to inflict on someone. So my next one is, there was a incident of anti-blackness where the black male, the civil court director, was walking through the area, and he had a empty mail bin in his hand. All right, so as he walked past two black females speaking to each other about white people practicing racism, in my opinion, he held up this empty bin and held it toward one of the black females saying, do you want what you're doing? So there's nothing in the bin. So you're insinuating she does nothing. She's lazy and shiftless. All right. And this is making fun. This is the ridicule, the anti-blackness. All right. This is I guess, the term favorite pastime. All right. And this is a black person in what they call a high position. All right. So I documented that. My next one is, there was an incident where I heard a darker complected CLIQ member say a phrase, we'll hate whoever we want. We'll hate whoever we want. You know, with a giggle behind it or whatever. So I don't know what the context was, but that's what phrase was used. My next one is, there was some reports that I've received of some victims of racism across the hallway. The first one is there was a big incident that occurred over in the civil area where there's a black female supervisor and there's this white woman that has been, I guess, taking her breaks in the lobby and doing a whole bunch of other things that are in violation of policy. And yesterday they had this huge feud and a altercation with each other. And the white woman says, "I quit." You know, she left. And the black female was told to go home. And she came back into the office today. But it looks like this person that quit, along with about two or three other people, are plotting against her. All right. And as well, it looks like a victim of racism has aided that white woman who self-terminated to go and make a report on the black female and the black male in a way that, I guess, trying to say, if they are doing something wrong to you, if you felt like you're being targeted, you can go tell the warden, you know, that person named the warden. So definitely this is to be expected. And this person herself is having a conflict. She's what they call a lead worker with the black female that is in a position of being the supervisor. All right, which leads to my other report where the top person, he is walking around with a bunch of plaques, you know, that has the milestones of how many years some people have been there. I thought it was out of place, out of character. You know, what's the real reason he's doing this? So I had a conversation with a victim of racism, and apparently he used the word experiment or experimentation. Reason being that she said it was codified because he grew his hair out and his beard, and he described it as being an experiment for why he did that. All right. So, but she said she thought it meant it was codified for him, I guess, being observant to something even greater than his lack there of grooming his own beard. All right. But it, when he used that term, it took me back to 2017, where you had that white blonde woman that was wearing the same outfits Monday through Thursday. She would wear the same clothes, all in, you know, for a result of an experiment. So the reason I'm making that connection from 2017 to now, they, you know, they talk to each other. They're in law. They're in the legal, you know, their esquire and their attorneys. They know how to be slick with words and questions and things like that. So I've been thinking about him using that term experiment. So he's been going around analyzing the black people specifically on how they've reacted to this incident. He hadn't really come around me necessarily. And I had one more observation. This is a sadistic act of white supremacy. In the area, the juvenile department, there's a white person that I believe is utilizing his connections to see what trial's coming up that has a high likelihood of being canceled, and he is assigning himself and another white person to attend those trials and having it set for the black people to attend trials where there's going to be prolonged times of stay, where they have to go upstairs. All right, and one of these black employees has had issues with her health, having seizures and whatnot. And what's even more disgusting is they know this person has a history of health issues, and they still subject her to this kind of treatment. But there's only so much you can do, because they'll say, hey, you know what? You're being negative. Don't mention this, but this is just observations that I like to share from me and another victim of racism. And that's all I have for now. Thanks for allowing me to share.
What information would be available, right, if you're looking at the schedule and you were going to do this, you were going to make sure that the Negroes have to go, it's not going to be canceled, and you're going to have to sit up there for the next, 8 hours. What information would you be able to kind of guess, like, oh, this is when it's likely to be canceled?
I'm not sure. It may be something, depending on if it's a newer case or maybe a case that's been around for a while, or if they may have had maybe like some kind of hearing before the trial starts, where they might have come to some kind of an agreement, and they have some kind of white connection to where they can have this already orchestrated to where when a specific hearing comes up, they'll already have it set to where it might not go on for long, maybe an hour or two, and they're done. And then they'll have the other trial scheduled for however long in the future they do. Okay, this one is bound to go for about 5 days. And, we'll set this one for the other two black people, because the apartment is four people, two white people, a white man, a white woman, two black female. So that's how it seems to be functioning.
Much obliged for the additional information. That's why I say be observant, right, in your work environment, because those type of – it's no such thing as a coincidence, right? Those type of patterns, where it's like, man, every time one of these trials gets canceled, or they already got an agreement, and they in and out in 45 minutes, and they go on with the rest of their day, it's the white people. They always get that. Every time it's one of these, it's like, oh, man, we're going to be here the next month. 8 hours every day. It's the black people. Like, dang, that's not happenstance. That sort of thing is widespread in all areas of people activity. Just being aware, paying attention, and as it's probably some unjust networking where they get a heads up, where they know these folks talk, they're friends, they hang out, do lunch and all that other stuff. They might know, like, oh, yeah, we already made a deal for these. Great. We'll make sure the niggers get all the long ones, and we'll be out of here. And he said, the deviousness, the sadistic nature of it. You know this black person has health issues. Great. Maybe they'll die in the courtroom, have a seizure right there in front of the judge. Like, what kind of, in the middle of the Rona and everything. I don't know if that's a comorbidity, but I mean, let's see. We got, I remember that the white woman was wearing the same clothes every day to see how people would respond. That was another one I said, being disciplined in the workplace. That's why I said that gossiping, because that would have been, you'd have been got Helen is coming in, and she's wearing the same dress every day, and we sit over in the corner. Did you see Helen? She's been wearing the same dress. And she probably got a recording or all the rest of it. That's in her notes. Oh, they were gossiping about it. Now he's doing it with the beard. Like he said, they could have talked before she left. I did such and such experiment. Here's my notes. I wrote it up, got it published. Interesting. Let my beard grow. This will be my Rona beard. I'll see how they respond in the workplace. Experiment. I would pay attention to any white person, any colleague, so-called teammate, who said they were conducting an experiment. I definitely, my ears would perk up as well. Let's see. I don't know what happened with the kerfuffle that resulted in the white woman quitting. She was having lunch out, I guess, in the lobby way or what have you, and we got a black supervisor offer. That could be enough to get things riled up. But they had whatever controversy, I guess, and the white woman quit. I think a second report that we've heard this week of a white woman either self-terminating or being terminated. She quits. In the middle of the Rona, she quits. That's huge. And then it somehow gets organized, like, hey, anybody else who's had a problem with this NICRA supervisor, you can feel free to go report. And they go in and report. You think, you said, even some other non-white people helped in this effort. Like, yeah, we'll pile on. No good, phony. You didn't want him here anyway. That is the system of racism, white supremacy. That's why I generally put all that stuff in quotes. This black person is in charge. Didn't say the white woman's in. He's the supervisor, but all this. And then everybody says, oh, yeah, it's his fault. We've had tons of problems. He's been a problem, you know, since day one. I don't know why they even hired him to begin with. Even some black people will go join. That is the system of white supremacy racism. And I think he said before, it was a number of black supervisors that had problems and that sort of thing. People had accused them or what have you. I think he said it was a black person who has a higher ranking title. Fellow came through with the empty mailbag, empty containers or what have you. And he said, do you want some of what's in here? Nothing, because that's what you do. I said, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I got a high tanking title here. You know, I'm maybe not the judge or what have you, but I mean, that's how you think. I'm just a shiftless, lazy nigga, huh? I don't do nothing. Sit around here, waste time talking all day long. That's what I said before. You're still a nigga. You want a reputation for being on time, courteous, all the rest of it, but you're still a nigga. Don't think, you know, that makes you special. Changes their perception of you, that they think you're smart, fit none at all. You're a nigger, lazy, shiftless, all the rest of it. That's the type of thing where you can just compare. He shared before, I call him Florida, when he talked about, I think it was a CLIC member that came out and yelled at the black person, where's my breakfast at? You didn't bring my breakfast? Well, get on out of here right now. Now, does she talk to white people like that in the courtroom, yelling at them or anywhere in the courthouse? Yelling at them, get out of here, and all the rest of it? Or is that just how you talk to the black people? You come in with that sort of comment to another black person. You don't do nothing, although I find a cute way of saying you don't do nothing. You're just a shiftless nigga. That's why I say I'm real cautious when people come out. That's their conclusion, that the problem is black people are lazy, because that's standard operating procedure in the system of white supremacy. That's everybody's conclusion. Black people are lazy. That's the excuse. That's the justification for everything in the universe being wrong. Black people are lazy. Let's see. I mentioned the CLIC members. They said, we'll hate whoever we want. That's Al-Qaeda talk, isn't it? That's straight gang talk. Like, terrorists. Like, what in the world? Like, who says? What's the workplace context for such a statement? Like, who is the we? And then who are you hating in a workplace context? What does that even mean? We'll hate, and these are people that brag about being gun owners. We'll hate whoever we want. FOBO years, easy. And then you put that in context with milestones. We'll hate whoever we want, and then that's the fella comes behind. We want to congratulate you on your milestone for being here. Like, you got people walking around hating and throwing drinks on people, and they can't even stop putting my water on the floor. Like, you get peanuts. You get a plaque and a bag of peanuts for your milestone for being here. You get an extra M&M for every year that you've been here. Let's see. CLIC members, milestones. I went to rat on him. Let's see. I think I got those. Always a PhD study at the courthouse. Man, I would encourage folks, though, to pay attention to those patterns. If you see things like that where something beneficial is happening for white people and something is, oh, man, all dreads, every time the non-white people miss out, that's not by chance. White people don't allow things like that to just happen by chance all the time. It is deliberate. Are there any other folks that have comments they want to get in before we conclude?
Hi, Gus.
Yes, ma'am.
So, really quick, when the woman began terrorizing my son, that was one of the things that she was going around saying, which was he was lazy and he wasn't doing his job. I mean, that was her constant comment, was he was lazy and he wasn't doing his job. So as I was giving him guidance today, you know, when they said they were going to write him up, I just said to him, you know, I would just ask them that, because they kept saying, oh, it's nothing, the write-up doesn't mean anything. When she came in and she told her side, this is what she said, and it's nothing. And I'm like, you know, no, it's something, because write-ups can be used to have leverage if you something happens after. Now, this can be the pattern, you know, they'll use it to show a pattern to terminate you and things of that nature. And as of right now, he's a traveler. And starting August 1st, he's going on permanent. So I said, you know, I would ask before signing, so does that mean when I start on the 1st as a full-time now, do I start with a fresh slate, or does this write-up now follow in my file? So he said he would ask that, and you know, really looked out for him. How would you feel? Would you sign it knowing that you did not? Because I said to him, maybe use language like, you know, I feel very uncomfortable signing this because I know I'd never said that to her. So signing it is in a way admitting guilt. But if I never said it, you know, I feel really uncomfortable signing it. But that's when he was told after, you know, don't worry about it. It looks like they're not going to do the write-up after all, and just go, you know, go through your day. So last he told me he didn't get the write-up. So, but, yes, the laziness was definitely being pushed big time.
It always is. Victims, even, we fall prey to, we've been, you know, brain trashed. You'll hear victims even say that, you know, that's the problem. Black people are lazy. That's why we got the wrong of black people are lazy. It is very common. I'm super resistant. I'm not surprised at all. This tacky white woman, and why she's doing crack at home, because she's so industrious, right? She's so such a hard worker, workaholic, they say. Once she puts the crack vial in, she can come down and criticize the lazy niggers. Please. Anything else folks need to get in before we conclude? Any other lazy black people need to speak up? Grand. We'll assume folks are satisfied, at least for this week. We should be here tomorrow. Compensatory call-in. 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. We'll review what went down the last week or so. Herman Cain passed away, man. Herman Cain, remember him? He ran for president in 2012. What a year. We'll review past week, catch up on, you know, August. It'll be August tomorrow. I cannot believe the summer is almost done. What a year. Anyway, sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. We need our brain computer working at maximum efficiency with all the problems we are faced with. In addition to being sober, let's be buckled if we are going out at all. I'm of the opinion we should be staying in. It's, man, you got armed white people. Federal authorities are out and about. The protests, the Rona, lots of reasons to kind of be in the house right now. If you got to go out, you got serious things, you got a doctor's appointment, work, things related to your offspring and the like, absolutely do what you have to do. But, man, I would be super alert as you are navigating the world right now. If it looks like somebody is getting aggressive, a white person is getting loud, hostile, this whole outing is done. We're not escalating. There are no skirmishes right now. I'm not trying to save face. Assume that that white fella or white woman is armed and that they might have 10, 5 other armed whites with them ready to hop out at a moment's notice. Totally done. We're totally out of here. We'll try this later at another time when it's safe. That's the mantra that I use. That's what I would encourage anybody else. It's just not a good time to take risks right now, especially in the U.S., too many armed white people. If you are sober and buckled, it's serious, you're going to go out. You are buckled if you are behind the wheel. For one, you got to be super vigilant and paying attention to what's going on. For two, we're trying to minimize contact with race soldiers, badge or no. Doing the little things that we can to try to minimize contact with the enemy. That's it. Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. No gossiping, no name calling. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, brother.
No problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
Even my conditioning has been conditioned.